With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Lollipop, lollipop, it is time for Must Have See TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. And I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com. This is part, 20 of the quarantine era, which is the new normal. And that means that I'm just talking with a person. We're not going to be dropping in clips from the episode. There's not going to be theme music. Apologize if you came here expecting to hear the Cheers theme. You're not going to, but we'll probably sing it at some point.
Yeah,
but this week, I am joined once again by fellow Cheers expert and horn dog, Ted Danson horn dog.
Horn dog for Ted Danson.
Angela DeManti. Hello, Angela.
Hello, Brett. I'm so glad to be here, by which I mean stuck in my apartment, have been for the last 5 months.
Zoom, zoom, zoom. So how's your quarantine going? Jesus Christ.
So the first couple months were just awful. Also, the first couple months.
It does.
The next
it feels.
Months.
I am nostalgic for early pandemic. Like, I am nostalgic for March and April.
Like, remember when we're all not exhausted by Zoom calls and watching Tiger King?
Oh, no. And it was like we were all doing Insta lives and people were just like fully wilding out and going nuts. And it was like a fun. And then everything just kept getting worse because the government kept not doing anything. And people do not vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, don't listen to the podcast. Fuck right off, because we got to get out of this. I don't care.
Yeah, Cheers. Turn this episode off and
make
really,
sure you are registered to vote. This is important.
We want to get out of register to vote and then come back. Otherwise, you don't deserve to listen to this.
No, just because it's a nightmare and we have to get out of the nightmare anyway we can. But we are pacifying ourselves in the nightmare. We're going to switch gears to being positive now. Have you been watching fun shit in quarantine?
So I've been, like, I think my favorite binges were Detroiters with Tim Robinson on Comedy Central. And What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, God, I love What We Do in the Shadows so much.
I was underwhelmed by the film. I kept hearing buzz. Mm. My roommate was also underwhelmed by the film.
I've still not seen the movie.
You don't have to.
No, I mean, I love the show, so.
Like, Matt Berry. Mwah.
I am flirting with the idea of being Laszlo for Halloween. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, just because I think it would require... I'm averse to any Halloween costumes that require a wig. My hair could get to that length by October.
Are you going to be Laszlo? Are you going to be Laszlo as a regular human bartender? Yeah.
I do think that Jackie Daytona is an easier costume, but I also, let's be honest, am looking for any excuse to buy a cloak.
Yeah. But I mean, all you need is a toothpick.
A toothpick. Well, who are you? You're a regular human bartender. It's so good.
That's been great escapism. And at the beginning, I thought, Mad Men would be too dark to revisit. But I actually have found watching it pretty comforting because there's so many tumultuous historical events and people still have to do the laundry and go to work. Yeah. And it's like, oh, all these horrible things are happening and you get to go to work?
You still have to go to work and watch the moon landing and riots and that's why I've not been watching anything. Mostly everything I've been watching is older than 1990 because I can't suspend my disbelief. Like, watching new shows is very hard because I'm just like I watched that American Pickle movie, the Seth Rogen movie, where it's on HBO Max and it is set in like modern day Brooklyn, and it's just like most people aren't wearing masks and also they're all outdoors, so my suspension of disbelief is just broken.
Did you watch
I Dream of Jeannie,
Palm Springs, which is a I was like, this is very relevant to like feeling I enjoyed
it. I love I love it. I also just like wish I was in Palm Springs right now. That's all. I just want to be.
Do you go through the like, why do I even live in New York now?
Oh no, I did. Yeah, well, I mean, our lease went up, and we were like, my husband was like, should we just go to St. Louis? And I don't know. We renewed, but it's also like I'm trying to justify it with like we're paying exorbitant New York rent, not for the culture and proximity and et cetera that we normally enjoy. We're paying that exorbitant rent for the city's response to coronavirus, which has been, compared to the rest of the country, a thumb up. Maybe two thumbs up. I don't know.
A friend who's a nurse in LA told me, she's like, New York went from worst to first. And I have said that too many times now, but I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like so we're paying the rent we have just so that in the event that I do need to go, you know, get a haircut or go pick up my stuff from my office, which is now like we're not in office anymore. I feel still anxious and not safe, but safer than I would in Tennessee or on a bunch of flat out morons that are not wearing masks. So that's great. But, you know, as awful as this week is, this week we are actually going to be traveling in the past. We're not going to be here. We're going to get away. We're going to go to January 21st, 1991, when Home Alone ruled the box office. The first time by Surface topped the charts, which is a song I had never heard before. It's a smooth R&B jam. And NBC aired the Cheers episode, The Days of Wine and Neuroses. Angela, you must have seen The Days of Wine and Neuroses before today.
Oh, I have in my multiple rewatchings of the entire series of Cheers, I watched it. But then also, it was great rewatching just that episode a few times in preparation. Yeah. And, you know, I am a Diane Years type of girl.
Yeah. This is my first Rebecca episode on the podcast.
Yeah, and this episode is what won her an Emmy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, like, I get a little black and white with, like oh, well, Diane Years are better. And it was great revisiting and thinking, wow, like, this episode in particular really let every character have a moment to shine.
Yeah. To talk about in the macro sense of Diane v. Rebecca, I will say, first of all, it is remarkable that Cheers is as perfect as it is from beginning to end, that it never, the show changes from a different kind of brilliant show to another different kind of brilliant show.
And I want to say, if you want to like boil it down to one word to describe each one, I would say it goes from witty to wacky.
Yeah. And that is what also, so Friends went through kind of that exact same metamorphosis, but I you know, will maybe controversially always say that it went from a brilliant type of witty to a lazier kind of wacky.
Okay.
The characters were not playing at the top of their intelligence, whereas when Cheers goes wacky, it is still smart.
Yes.
It becomes a high farce of good performances and sharp writing with really good jokes.
And at the beginning... I'm sorry.
No.
At the beginning of season six, it feels like half the writing staff left, right? And we're ushered in. And it felt like, especially Sam, felt like a caricature of Sam in the beginning. And I was like, oh, you're still figuring this out. And that's... But then they did figure it out, but then they were able to have far more playful moments. And this is not the first episode where Cliff and Norm have broken out into song.
I know. Yeah. So I still love, I think the best part about the Rebecca half of Cheers, which is more than the Diane, it's a full season more. This is 5 and 6 split. I do think that what is better about that is by the end of Diane's run, the show was so Sam and Diane, to the detriment of Diane's character.
And where, like, people hated her because
she goes fully nuts.
Yeah, and, like, I understand that. And then it turned into more of an ensemble comedy, I think.
Yeah, the latter half is, like, there is no, because they, like, and we'll talk about this more in the episode talk, but, like, they could not replicate Sam and Diane with Sam and Rebecca. Like,
and they tried.
And they tried, and it doesn't work. And no. They wisely did not keep trying to, you know, jam that square peg into a round hole or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
They just made it an ensemble show it's great. So this week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Cheers episode, The Days of Wine and Neuroses. It is the 15th episode of season 9. It was written by Brian Pollock and Mert Rich and directed by James Burrows, of course. Here is how Hulu describes the episode. Rebecca reveals her true feelings about Sam when Robin proposes. Angela, how accurate is that description?
It's not.
At all.
She gets wasted and, I mean, like, we're rushing through to that last scene. But, which the last scene is 8 minutes long out of 24-minute episode. Granted, like, the last 45 seconds are credits, but she doesn't reveal feet. Like, and the thing is, I watched it. I read the Hulu description, and then I rewatched it. I'm like, did I miss something? And I think it's the next episode when it's the wedding day, and that's when she reveals.
I wonder if maybe the same, I don't know, I was going to say maybe the same description as with both episodes, like they wrote it like a two-parter, but who knows?
It wasn't like billed as a two-parter. She just revealed that she was having second thoughts about Robin.
Yeah, it's like Rebecca reveals her true feelings about Robin to Sam after Robin proposes is the copy edit on that description.
Yeah,
I think.
I mean, maybe we should get the copy editor on this episode to weigh in on, like,
who are you?
He or she or they were thinking.
CBS intern or whoever, Paramount intern, whoever it is. So the episode opens with what because I did not remember this episode in detail, and so I thought it was just a bit up top. I didn't realize they were introducing the B plot like right away in the cold open, where like the jukebox is broken and Cliff goes over and kicks it and it doesn't. Yeah, and it doesn't work.
And it's just like a classic, like, you know. If he's going over to the jukebox, you know it's going to end in failure.
Yeah.
And it's like a very quick cold open.
Yeah.
And like, it's funny, but not like a solid, like, beginning, middle, end joke. But then you realize it's because they were introducing the B plot.
Yeah, and so, like, then the episode proper begins after the opening credits, which are iconic and no one should ever skip when they watch on Netflix or Hulu.
Never.
Or that's not on Netflix anymore, so Hulu or Peacock or CBS All Access.
And if that prompt comes up, if you want to skip the intro, you should write a letter to your streaming provider saying, what the fuck, sociopath.
Yeah, no thank you. So then we actually find out the jukebox thing is the B-plot. It is a major part of this thing. So, like, they're all upset that the jukebox. I find this really funny that this is the episode we're talking about, because they're like, Frasier keeps being like, why are you guys upset? You don't use the jukebox. This is fully ridiculous. You guys are crazy. But the last episode that we talked about was Fairy Tales Can't Come True, right?
And which featured the jukebox. Like,
it's
maybe
a major
the only
part.
Other episode that they actually use the jukebox during.
Well, there's that, and there's also the Halloween episode where they just make it the vampires were doing the twist, like, where he makes it that weird song that just keeps playing every single time they, like, put in a quarter or whatever. So I thought that was funny that, like, Frasier's screaming about the jukebox, and I'm like, man, if we only watched these two episodes, we'd be like, Frasier's gaslighting them. Like, they use the jukebox.
Frasier is gaslighting us about the jukebox.
I did love that Sam was like, well, no, but, like, it's the perfect height to like lean on and hit on someone from.
That was like very, and I loved when like the random like under five blonde woman just woman like, was like, "Hey," it's like, "I'm just demonstrating." I was like, "Yeah, that was, yeah, like yeah. I understand under five lady. Like I would do that too." Even though his hair is not the best in this season.
Yeah, this is. I will point out that my eye for details might be not as good in this episode because I did watch this episode on my 1986 Zenith television.
Oh,
so I will have the kind of observations that people from 1991 will have of couldn't really make out what his hair looked like. I just know it was that weird short.
Yeah, like his style's better where he's not wearing those embarrassing sweaters.
Yeah, Woody got the sweaters in this episode.
His hair is just a little too short, but there's that like wonderful moment, one of my favorite Sam Malone moments, where he puts his foot up on something behind the bar to lean and listen. Yeah. And he's wearing boat shoes.
Oh, I wish I noticed that.
He like so that they're still shoes. Like he's not wearing the awful sweaters, but he's still wearing boat shoes, and women still want him.
Love. So this is the weird part about this episode is that the delivery people are the people are reclaiming the jukebox and taking it away, and they're like, "What can we replace?" Like, do they run a service where they pick up things but then also drop things off?
Because like, I have never heard of such a service. They're like, "We're gonna take your jukebox for a week. What do you want?"
We got a cigarette machine. But you know what? It's funny, so I'm not gonna. But they're like, "We have a karaoke machine," and no one knows what a karaoke machine is.
I didn't research what that blew me away that they needed Cliff explain it.
Of course Cliff knows.
But also with that explanation. So in the opening, watching it, I remember thinking, wow, because like the guy picking up the jukebox is Asian. And I thought, wow, I never see Asians on Cheers. And then of course, in his explanation of karaoke,
it's a pretty racist joke.
He says it's of Oriental descent.
What's like a music machine, kind of like you, my friend, or something like, yeah.
Frasier does a full face palm, resting his head in his hands. And I was like, that's why this holds up, because of that reaction.
Frasier understands that this is a not good. It is a weird reminder of how karaoke went from being, honestly, like karaoke has gone from being this, first of all, an unknown thing to being a niche nerdy thing that no one wants to do. I even remember like when Lost in Translation came out, and that's like what, 2005, and there was like all those scenes in Japan of doing karaoke, and it was like even in 2005 that seemed like, I knew what karaoke was, but it seemed like exotic and like that's a weird treat, like who does that, you know? And maybe it's because we live in New York and karaoke is, I don't know, everywhere, like that it's such a normal, fun, cool, good thing, good time. The last time I karaoke'd was the week before we left our office. We had a big office karaoke thing, and we had been told about karaoke. So we brought a whole bunch of sanitary wipes, and we like bought, and so we were like wiping down the microphone and stuff while we were still performing. And that was last time I saw people.
Almost went to do live karaoke at Sid Gold's. The like last night I went out. But I ended up not. But yeah, I was like, and now I think, dreams. Like, when am I going to do karaoke again?
Yeah. I did. I have done it on my Instagram Live back in the glory days of March and April.
Oh, like when like we thought this, we're going to keep the fun up.
When everything was fine. So they introduced the karaoke machine, but then this is when Rebecca comes in to introduce the A plot, which she has gotten a card. Well, the card did not have a limerick on it, right? She comes out to say, like, what was the connection between the limerick?
Yeah, she said there was a limerick, and the limerick never, like, it's not Chekhov's gun, it's the opposite. Like, we never hear it.
Yeah. So it's like Robin wrote her letter, like, he's getting out of prison, Robin Colcord, who's played by Roger Rees, another legendary sitcom gay. Sitcom gay that we respect.
Yeah, big time.
He's like also a limerick, and I like that everyone is like, yeah, tell us about the limerick. And she's like, he's getting out of jail. And they're like, and then Woody's like, Rebecca, I just want you to know that I'm also interested in what Robin had to say. It's 50-50.
Like, yes.
But then as soon as she leaves, she's like, I'm glad she bought that thing about me being interested about Robin. Like, they're all interested in the limerick, which we never hear.
Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah. We're fine with that. You know what? So then they hook up the karaoke machine, and Frasier goes over and he's like, oh, they have all these great standards and stand blah, 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 blah. And then you just hear lollipop, lollipop, because Cliff is
like, you see them come together and you know they're going to be ridiculous. And as I could see them getting ready to sing, my whole body just relaxed.
I know.
Because it felt so on brand and in a sense predictable. And what is predictable in everyday life now? But
nothing.
Like,
except for this.
Yeah.
It felt like I felt a wave of calm over me, like a full on tactile, visceral reaction to Cheers watching this episode.
Yes.
That I haven't felt of just like, and so like when they started singing Lollipop, and I was just like, I love an episode where it is Cliff and Norm are unapologetic best buds, and there is no Norm trying to like distance himself from being like,
where he's like, no, I'm in it, I am in this friendship,
and I just,
we all know how people feel about Cliff, but I love him, and I'm gonna let him do the I can't.
And then I like that when Frasier like is like, this is so stupid. And also, by the way, this is how you pop. And he like, I can't do literally any of it. But he does it perfectly. Or it was ADR. I don't know. And then this is when a delivery guy comes up. And a delivery guy enters Cheers. First of all, Cheers is bustling today with all sorts of deliveries and pickups.
And this guy, he fucking nailed those two lines.
Like, love this guy.
Like,
he comes in.
It made me want to IMDb and like find him. And
go?
I'm sure he never got big. I'm like, can I find him on Facebook just to like send him a message? And be like,
but it'll go to the unread portion and you'll never see it. If you are an actor over the age of 60, please check your message request because I might be trying to get in touch with you. Bill Mumy. It's fine. So he comes in to deliver a rose to Rebecca, and she like tips him, and his line is something like,
so he gives a quarter.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh wow. And it's this can pay for my grandmother's operation or something.
Yeah,
like
that's something. It's just a hilarious, stupid, specific. And so like, I guess we can talk about this larger note I have about this episode, maybe this era of Cheers, is this episode is filled with so many hard jokes, like so many like setup, punchline, jokes you don't see coming. We'll get to my favorite one in a bit, but like, so that'll be a running part of the discussion.
Okay.
Cause it's so fun. It just makes it feel like livelier and zippier in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the kind of writing that sitcoms try to do now, but do not do well somehow.
Yeah, and like they were firing on all cylinders in season 9.
Yeah, this is season 9. This is 1991.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And all the quips, they're all very ba-dum-ching, but then every character has their own ba-dum-ching. Like,
yeah.
Lilith's is her own thing. Frasier's is his own thing. Woody. But like, they just nail it.
So like watching modern day like Netflix multicam sitcoms, they don't have their own thing. All of the characters have the exact same style of funny. None of them have their own voices. They all have the same level of like intelligence, pop culture awareness, delivery rhythm. It's all the same.
Like, even like the rhythms are different. Like with Woody, you know, it's going to be kind of like, huh, what? And then, here's a way you didn't expect me to be dumb.
Yes.
And then like Lilith is very like monotone, very flat and skating. And then yeah. Cliff is like, oh, well, like that's his rhythm. And it's
yeah,
perfect.
It's really, it makes it feel more natural, even though it is very wacky writing. That makes it feel natural. That's why the show is fucking genius. But anyway, the Rose has a proposal from Robin. Rebecca has gotten the thing she's been wanting. The thing that her entire character is built around, which is why I don't like Rebecca as much. Let's unpack that a bit.
I want to marry someone rich.
Yeah, like that. It's almost as far from Diane as you can get. Which, hey, you know, intentional. That's a smart move.
Yeah, but I mean, this one explores like, oh, have I even thought about what's behind my desires?
Yep, which is good, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I think it even, like, I mean, she's a neurotic mess, but it makes her a little more likable because she's questioning, like, the main essential element that is her character.
Which is defining herself by an asshole. He's not a good person. I did like that. Oh, you popped. You're a rose.
Sorry. My mother was calling me, and then it went to the iPad. So okay.
Nice. Anyways. Oh, I hate it when that happens. That always happens.
I hate it when my mother calls me.
So then we get to the next scene, and Lilith has thrown Rebecca an engagement party because Rebecca did the same for her, and Rebecca's
in
like
a hilarious episode to all the girls I loved before.
Yeah, so like it's funny that she's so this becomes a whole thing of yeah, well, you know, I planned that last minute, so like thank you so much for putting actual effort into this.
And it's really funny that Rebecca said that she planned Lilith's engagement party last minute because everyone's in the same clothes as that opening scene, so this engagement party is happening last minute on the same day.
But I guess Lilith's last minute is, you know, way more with it. She's got connections.
Yeah.
This is where, so Cliff has the funny little aside about Mylar balloons being like, this is an example of those weird asides that make, no, they're not a part of the episode, but it's just like, he's talking to Paul and he's like, yeah, Mylar balloons, they get caught up in the lines and, you know, cause, you know, explosions or whatever. And then Norm just grabs someone's like, let's go. I wrote at this point so many jokes.
And that only works because these characters are so lived in, where like we don't need an explanation because we know who those people saying those ridiculous lines are.
This is when Frasier, I think Frasier interrupts him to give his toast. And this is my favorite moment in the episode, I don't know, is so like he gives a speech, Rebecca thinks it's about her, and then he ends it with to Lilith.
Yeah.
And he has to, then he just says as an aside to like Sam or someone, he's like, well, I had to do that or else I would be in trouble. And what is funny is they end up reverse justifying it. So like they tell you that is the punchline sort of. I don't know. It is not a running character game with Lilith that she always needs to be mentioned in speeches.
No, but like, so I think when Rebecca goes to her, it's like, oh, and then like, that's where it sets up the stakes where it actually is meaningful to Lilith when you never would think it would be. And it's basically just a game just for this episode, and it never comes up with her character again.
Yeah. But like Frasier makes that, and it seems like a weird throwaway joke. But then a second later, when like Rebecca starts making a speech, and then she like thinks someone doesn't think her, and then Lilith's like, and then like I forgot someone thinks someone again, and doesn't think Lilith, like thinks herself, and then Lilith is like, Frasier, get your coat.
Like,
and then
she's
finally
like, that's strike two, and then
that's strike two, and that was so funny. And then she's like, now Frasier, get your coat, and then she finally thinks Lilith, and then she's like, Frasier, why are you leaving? Why would we ever leave this party? And that made me like laugh out loud. And it is neither here nor there. That has literally nothing to do with the A or B plot. It is not even a C plot. It is just a hilarious, funny bit of business that the episode has an 8-minute scene at the end that is like heartfelt and like rich. And it also still has that moment in it. Like they still find time for that.
And then they have time for Carla being Carla.
Yeah. The helium karaoke happens.
Yeah.
Where they start singing Lollipop. I'm wondering, like, they didn't want to spend money rights for more than just one song. They're like, Lollipop. Well, no, they have a couple others. Frasier.
But, like,
Frasier
there's standards. And then also, like, you realize, because a lot of, like, songs, you know, got, they did, like, cheaper ones for streaming. But you see people singing. It's like, oh, you have to pay for the rights. Let's make sure they're, like, old songs.
So they start singing Lollipop on Helium, and then Frasier grabs it, and then Frasier starts singing, and then, like, Frasier is into it.
Also, this was when karaoke machines, you didn't have the lyrics.
Oh, I didn't even read. Yeah, there's no screen.
Yeah,
they're just counting on you.
Like, oh, you just know all these songs by heart? Like,
okay. What karaoke song, because I have mine, like, what could you do without a screen just to impress everyone else in the room?
Mack the Knife.
Okay.
Which I think is also a song that Frasier might have picked. That's an old standard, like, old. But, like, that's a story song, mm-hmm. and I've listened to it a million times, and it's not common enough where it can get a room full of strangers going, because, yeah.
Mine is It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine by R.E.M.
I mean, Boom. It's very appropriate now.
Yeah.
But do you feel fine? Do you?
I don't feel fine. Oh, God. Ugh. So then this is when is she trying to make a toast? She just keeps saying, this is Great Champlain. And she just keeps saying, oh, sorry, I messed that up. This is Great Champlain. This is Great Champlain. And it's at this point in my note that I wrote, like, Christy Alley is good. Like, Christy Alley is a complicated public figure in terms of Scientology reasons.
Oh, I was going to say that, yes. But she played, like, there's so many wrong or bad ways to play drunk, and she plays it well.
She also somehow, in her character is pathetic, but never annoying. Like, there's a fine balance that she strikes with Rebecca, where even though a lot of the time she is being humiliated, degraded, can't stick up for herself, just throws herself into whatever man she's trying to get with, there is still an innate humanity. Like, there's still, like, a resolve. I don't, like, she does it in a way that is not, like, bad for humankind.
You watch it and you don't hate her for it.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of, I think that, like, the humanity, and, like, there's, like, this, sure, she could be really superficial, but there is this pathetic element where you realize she's a woman who's kind of relied on outside sources for validation. And and she's kind of coming to an age where she's, like, realizing this has not been working. And I think also, like, especially this episode, like, she admits, like, her way of doing things isn't helpful to her, like, her life. And, like, there's something about, like, someone who knows they're stuck in the same set of patterns but can acknowledge it. And it's like the person who's, like, an addict but they want help versus the person who's an addict who doesn't want help.
She's a hard character to play, and you have to give it up to Christy Alley for playing her and, like, making it work, because
I would say with Diane was a really tricky character to play, mm-hmm. and, like, they were giving these women, like, really tough challenges, but they also wanted to give them something dynamic. But, like, I don't even know how it read when it first aired versus now with, like, the feminist movement.
Because, like, I think that Diane is a character that, I think in the 80s, when you watch it in the 80s, I think you're not supposed to like her. And I think that you're, like, season 1-2 Diane, I think you're supposed to be, like, she's a killjoy, she's not funny, she's blah, blah, blah. And I think her character has aged remarkably well.
Oh,
especially in an episode like The Boys in the Bar. Like, Diane is in 1984 standing up for gay rights in a way that 100% reads like 2020. Yeah. Like, it and the fact that it's, you know, 30 something, 35 years old is makes it so much more ahead of its time. Whereas I feel like in the early 80s when that aired, people have been like, come on, Diane.
Well, I just feel like that would just be another reason during that time to hate her. Like, yeah. Really? You're going to harp on this little issue? Yeah.
And so she's aged really well.
Yeah.
And but then on the reverse side, I wonder if Rebecca came on, and because Rebecca was, she's introduced as like 80s business. She works for the corporation. She's like
shoulder pads.
I was going to say, yeah. So like, I'm wondering if at the time people were like, finally, Rebecca's like a real take charge. Like, you know, she's not like a snooty brain. She's like, I don't know how people viewed her at the time. Like, I'm wondering if there has been like a reversal in how Diane and Rebecca have been viewed over the course of 30 years. But then they also have good and bad sides, because Diane, her whole I want to marry and not marry Sam thing in season 5 is some next level bananas.
He proposed 5 times.
To the point where she almost like made a judge, like she filed charges against him and like made a judge demand. Like, that's wild.
She jumped off the boat. But like that, what?
Yeah, so like
it there goes, were people yeah, so jumping like, you off know, boats in that relationship. It wasn't healthy.
Good and bad all around. So then we get the act break, and then we come back, and now like a couple days of like 2 days have passed, because Frasier is now wearing a cardigan that has a bear on it. Was that?
And it looks like the Disney animated like prototype for Baloo
and Little John
and also Baloo from Tailspin. Let's acknowledge both Baloos.
Yes, different continuities, different.
And then there's a quote over his right breast, and his arm is covering it because he's so into singing, but I just know it ends with Amazon.
What a weird...
I paused it, I'm like, what is this quote that I think this bear is singing? It was... truly bizarre, but
that's like, his crooning outfit. That's the outfit that he's like, this is what I wear when I perform.
Also, Kelsey Grammer has a lovely singing voice.
Good. Which makes total... I mean, he's done Broadway musicals, right? Hasn't he?
So he was in the revival of La Cage aux Folles. And he played George in that. And I remember seeing it with a friend at an intermission. He said, like, I love Kelsey Grammer playing Bob Hope, because all of his cadence was like very Bob Hope-ish, which is very weird. But I mentioned this on like our first podcast we ever did together. Don't mind if I don't, when we talked about Cheers, where he was in the original production of Sunday in the Park with George off Broadway. And I guess Kelsey Grammer and Mandy Patinkin were classmates at Juilliard. And then they were doing this show together, but Mandy Patinkin was like had a lunch with one of the producers, and they were looking for this role, and then Mandy Patinkin passed Kelsey Grammer's name on, so that's why Kelsey Grammer has his career, because of Mandy Patinkin.
Thank you, Mandy Pants.
Thanks, Mandy Pants. you did good. But he's done, and I find it really interesting now, like, looking at Cheers, being like, oh, Bebe Neuwirth and Kelsey Grammer were, like, the only ones, I think, to do Broadway musicals.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't know Broadway enough, but, like, come on, Shelley Long should have been doing some plays and shit, right? She should have been.
Maybe. I don't know
I don't know.
But, like, in terms of musicals, though, like, oh, they're the ones who are actually trained and have good voices, and...
That is what I miss the days when sitcoms were just nothing but triple threats. Nothing but people that could sing, dance, and act. That's all. Like, just give it... I think I talked about this in the Odd Couple episode from last week, where I was like, yeah, Jack Klugman can sing and dance. And just if you're just watching Oscar Madison, you're not going to think that. But I watched him on Carol Burnett's show, and it's like, yeah, he was doing song and dance numbers on that. It's like...
Well, it's like anyone who only knows Jerry Orbach from Law and Order. Oh, no.
Lumiere, motherfucker.
Yeah, and also if you watch the Beauty and the Beast performance of Be Our Guest at the Oscars, they do it double time, just 4 time, and it's like 60 whatever year old Jerry Orbach fucking bringing it.
Oh, I need to watch that. Holy yes. shit. I watched the Howard documentary on Disney Plus, and they have footage from the day that they recorded a lot of the songs. Like, I think Be Our Guest, because it's Jerry Orbach and Angela Lansbury. Around a microphone, just singing. And it's just like, this is wild.
I have a real quick Angela Lansbury Beauty and the Beast.
Anecdote.
Where I guess she didn't want to do the singing parts for Mrs. Potts. And she's like, I'm too old. Like, no. And she was like embarrassed. And I'm like, I don't understand, you're Angela Lansbury. And it's also great to know, like, gods and goddesses also have insecurities. So like, well, let's just do one take of the song Beauty and the Beast just so we can animate it. And she did one take, and that's the take they used.
It's fucking nuts. Yeah.
Angela, one take. Lansbury.
That's why every episode of Murder, She Wrote only took 40 minutes to shoot.
Yeah, she just, like, just they just followed her around. Like, that was it.
Lilith explains, she psychoanalyzes Frasier real quick and is like, this makes sense because his parents had a bunch of Broadway cast recordings and played them loudly to cover up the sound of their lovemaking.
And she says it so in that Lilith way where it's like,
yeah.
Uh-huh. But I mean, the best Lilith moment comes like a minute later.
Which one is that?
Is it Sam who's talking to her? And then she's like, I'm going to say what I tell all my patients. What do you think?
Yeah.
People pay you for that? What do you think? And I was like,
Great.
Thinking of therapy, I'm like, it's a very good question.
Oh, yeah, no, hey, get me going. That's how I am. This is where I wrote down the Woody's. Woody's sweater is this, it looks like a leftover Christmas sweater. It's like, it's these, like, green,
were
it's like
snails?
Maroon, green, no, they were like triangles, like gold, like, triangles in like a weird pattern, and it was all like,
I don't understand it.
Yeah, it was truly nuts, which I just noted that I can't remember what he was talking about. Oh, and this is when Sam is trying to get everyone to go check on Rebecca because she's been missing for 2 days, theoretically on a bender.
And also, that means Frasier has been on a 2-day bender of singing karaoke.
All the standards.
Which
all the standards.
Is great.
Sam asks Carla to go. She's like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll go. You can take the kids to Smurfs on Ice. He's like, cool, I'm going.
Like, yeah.
I saw something on ice when I was a kid. It might have been Sesame Street on Ice. I can't remember, but I did see something on ice.
I saw Sesame Street on ice.
Or it might have been Disney on ice. I don't know. Maybe I'm having like weird recollections of like Dopey on ice skates. I don't know. Who knows? So then we get the final scene of the episode,
which is a third of the episode.
Sam goes to Rebecca's apartment. He knocks on the door. She opens it. It is pitch black. It is dark. She is drunk. And it is a mess. So in order to get her to turn on the lamp, he turns on the light, she turns it off, he turns it on again, she turns it off, and then he just says click.
Click.
and then she turns it on.
Which is like, that's like something from the 50s. It's just like vaudeville in like it's nature. Just, it's wonderful.
Something so great about watching. I also think the problem with multicam sitcoms that are not written well now is that they are not performed. The characters are always doing that Nickelodeon Disney Channel mugging to the camera. Like if that joke had been in, I don't know, what's a current Netflix, Mr. Iglesias or a Family Reunion or a Fuller House. Like, it would have been click, and then the lights would have come on, and then Sam would have been standing there with, like, his arms crossed.
Yeah.
And, like, he would have, like, rolled his eyes. And instead, like, I feel like you could give this exact script to a cast of a current show that are going for that style.
They would ruin it.
And it would not be No Good Nick. That's a one. Oh, yeah, it makes me upset. It's also crazy in 2020 just to see anyone drinking and smoking at the same time on television because we don't see smoking is persona non grata on TV.
I also find it fascinating. Like in her mess, she has like empty champagne bottles And then she has multiple, not champagne flutes, but the other kind of glass. But like, there's like three of them on her coffee table. I'm like, why did you need a new glass?
Just refill.
Rebecca,
when you're drunk, you know. Also, I'm now realizing this is before the days of, you know, shipped or Peapod, or I'm trying to think of all the different grocery services we use, or TaskRabbit or whatever. Like, was she hobbling down to like the bodega on the corner to buy champagne and then coming, or did she just, was she like, I'm now picturing, like, did Rebecca plan an elaborate New Year's party that
never happened, or no one came to? Because
this is January. It's January 21st. So I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to, like, no prize fanfic this.
I love also in, like, the dishevelment of her apartment, both lamps on the end table of her couch, the shades are tilted. Like of course, like,
yeah.
You get drunk, you knock lampshades, you make them askew.
I need this to be tilted. I also commented that Rebecca's hairography in this section of just like the hair and like the hand, like her hair is next level. It's just her hair is the star of the show. I don't know. Her hair might be the must-see performance.
I was focusing on it a lot and I thought I shouldn't be focused. Like, what am I doing? But it's a force of nature.
It like the way that it falls, like it, I honestly wonder if Chrissy Alley didn't have that, is that hair most of the performance that makes Rebecca seem like a strong, like it's such a strong, like it's take charge hair.
Well, like I have big curly hair, yeah. And I've thought like, if I didn't have my hair, would I be who I am? Like,
oh, hey, yeah. The like existential crisis I'm having now, where I'm like, am I me if I can't go to the mall or go to the beach? Like, this is the, that's what quarantine is doing.
Who am I?
Well, it feels like the end of Buffy season 2, where Angel is like, he's got her on, Angelus is their corner, and he's like, no friends, no family, no hope, take that away, what's left? And then he like tries to, like, he lunges, and she catches the sword between her hands, and she says, me. And then they fight, and it's great. But I've been thinking about that a lot lately, like, no Panera Bread, no Subway,
nothing.
No shopping,
no what's friends. Left?
Yeah, it's like, what's left? I don't know. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
So her hair is a force of nature. She has total cold feet, because she's finally realizing what we as viewers have realized from the jump is like, first of all, he's rich, but he ain't rich anymore because he went to jail.
Yeah.
Like, well, he don't got the money.
Well, what's keeping you with this guy?
Yeah.
Besides his dashing good looks.
Yeah. I always remembered him as from Robin Hood Men in Tights was my primary.
Yeah, I mean, that was big.
Yeah.
Also, I remember him as the substitute teacher on one episode of My So-Called Life.
Oh, that's concurrent to this. Oh, that's a couple years after this.
It was like 95.
It's like 94. I think 94, 95 is
yeah,
My So-Called Life.
Yeah, I think that
Life.
Was right around, yeah.
This is where I noted that. So Sam and Rebecca have a fundamentally different energy, and it plays out in this too, because like Rebecca has this whole like, she has this drunken speech of like, I just thought about this, you know, moment where I just felt the most like earth shattering valid, like, you know, just like pouring her soul. And then Sam just puts his hand on her and is like, yeah, I know, like, yeah, when we had sex it was gonna, she's like, when I won first prize at a horse show was like the most electrifying moment of her life. And that the way that the show is using this scene to contrast, to kind of point out the fact that, like, yeah, it was kind of stupid that we tried to put them together at one point. Because they're pointing out, like, right here that Sam's like, yeah, when we hooked up, that's the most exciting thing. She's like, absolutely not.
Which is, like, it feels validating as an audience member. Like, yeah. Like, oh, good. Like, you knew it, too. Like, you weren't fucking this up. We all knew. Like, it just kind of, it justifies everything that
they
happens.
Have such good friend energy that every single time Sam tries to even casually hook up with her, it does feel off. He has more chemistry. He has more like romantic chemistry with that girl that he brushes off at the jukebox. Like, I buy them together. I don't buy, for some reason, and it is weird because they are both two charismatic performers, but there's just something about their energy that never felt sexy or like one true pairing.
Never. And then like there were like really uncomfortable moments when it just felt like, you guys aren't listening to each other. It feels like, hey, someone said no. No means no.
Yeah, and when that happens in this one, like, she just keeps... So, oh, they do find the lamp wine. He pulls out, like, what, does he pull that champagne bottle out of a lamp or something?
Well, I know he finds the two empties behind a couch cushion. I don't...
And then she, like, pull... She says she pulls one out of somewhere. He's like, well, I don't need this anymore if I'm not going to drink. And then she pulls it out of... I thought it was a lampshade. I was like, that's wild. But she still wants to party because she wants Sam to drop his pants. And she immediately just starts coming after him.
Like, there's no subtlety there. Like, she basically says, like, take your clothes off.
Yeah, I want to do this. And it's really great. Sam has a good moment where he's like, listen, a gentleman, you know, I have my rules. Like, you've been drinking. This is not right.
And like, it's one of the few episodes where he says, I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah. He gets Sam's performance in this scene is very, very Ted Danson's fucking great. And he's so like, I'm a recovering alcoholic. You know, it did so much to my life. Like he's honestly like there to be like, hey, Rebecca, please like chillax with this. Things
and he's
are
definitely
scary.
Like, the least cartoon version of himself.
Yeah. So that when it comes to this moment where she's really throwing himself at him and he's like, listen, you know, it's not right. Like you've been drinking. And then he's like, and also you're kind of repulsive right now.
And then it cuts to her and she looks like one of those cartoon characters that has like 20 cigarettes in their mouth. And she only has one, but she does that. Like it's just dangling.
Yeah.
Where like the way like her dignity is dangling by a thread, like that cigarette. And then she leave it on her, the camera, and it's oh.
Well, and then she has the one up where she's just like, can't take it, and then she like it's so good.
Yeah.
And then she like she gets him against the wall. She even like tries to put her like leg up to like pin him, and then she like is like I'm going for it, and then she just falls. Right into him.
Yeah, and then like, and that's the end of the episode where she.
I honestly was prepared for another act. Like, I did not expect that blackout. Like, I thought I didn't remember this episode ending that way, and I was like, oh wow, like that's.
Yeah, no, it surprised just... me too. It felt like they go back to the bar and then back to them. But it was like, nope. The ending is she passes out.
Yeah. What's up with the jukebox? Do we find out
we
next
never
episode?
Know.
Oh, God.
The next episode we do will be, like, when the jukebox is featured.
I need to know. The jukebox dangling thread, I have to know.
Yeah.
Are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode?
Yes.
Whoa!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So, 32.3 million people watched this episode of television.
Wow, TV was so different back then.
32.3 million people watching Cheers. Like, just take me back. So for the week, this was the number three show for the week.
Okay.
Only because number five was Murphy Brown, four was Roseanne, three was Cheers, Two was the Super Bowl postgame, and number one was the Super Bowl. So,
well, otherwise.
Yeah, Cheers was the number one scripted show on television this week.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even that entire season.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It was like, it was like, it really just kept going up.
Mm-hmm.
All its entire run. They could have gone a 12th season, I think. Like, the ratings
just
were not.
Tired of it.
Yeah, 11
I think
years.
They made offers too, and the cast was like, no, I can't.
We've done. And so the NBC Thursday night lineup in 1991 was The Cosby Show, A Different World, Cheers, Wings, and LA Law.
Oh my, Wings.
Yeah, this is like, I think Wings season two, I think.
I was going to say, this must have been the beginning.
I love, so I read that Top of the Rock book, the like oral history of like must-see TV. And the way that they shade Wings is so funny. Like, they kept like, they basically treat it as a Cheers knockoff. Well, they're like, it's Cheers in an airport. Like, that's like, that's, it's always spoken of derisively. No one liked it. and so it's just, it's funny. I don't know. I liked Cheers a lot. I liked Wings a lot when I was a kid. I've still not done Wings on this podcast.
I don't, like, I remember watching Wings. I don't remember it. The biggest thing I remember about Wings was maybe 10 years ago, late night TV writer Eliza Skinner made a Facebook update, not even Twitter, where she said, oops, just watched an episode of Wings. I think I'm barren now.
Oh my God. I mean, that show is like filled with Sam and Diane's, because both the brothers, both the Haskell, oh God, what's their, oh geez, I can't remember what, oh no. I have to look. Wings, Wikipedia. I need to know what their names are. I'm going to blame this on the drinks that I've had that's making me forget what the name. Joe Hackett, the Hackett brothers were always, they had so many Will They Won't Theys going on. With the Chapel Sisters, I do believe.
Okay.
Anyway, I did like Wings. I should do Wings at some point.
Have you rewatched
show.
Any of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like, it's so, they have some good, they have a couple good gay episodes. Roy's son, played by Abraham Ben Ruby, comes out to him because he's like a big football player, and he comes out and he's like, yeah, I'm also gay and like the cello, so please don't hate me, Dad. And it's a really good episode, and it's great because it, if I remember it correctly, it doesn't end with them solving the problem. It ends with like, Roy gets to the point where like, he doesn't hate his son, but it's like bare minimum. Like, no, like, he doesn't come around to understand. Like, it's more realistic than I would give Wings credit for in any other episode, probably.
Okay.
I don't know. So it's good. I mean, it is a, you know, murderer's row of I mean, Tim Daly, Steven Weber, Crystal Bernard. I'm just reading the cast list. Thomas Hayden Church, Tony Shalhoub.
Church, I forgot.
Yeah, lol. Yeah, so it's I should do it at some point. But yeah, it was part of that NBC Thursday night lineup. There is an aesthetic to 1991. Like, watching late Cheers, I don't know, there's something, I guess also because I remember this time, I was, you know, seven, I guess. How does age work? I have a nostalgia for this aesthetic of like those, like this all pings things in my brain that, even though I didn't watch this episode when it aired, like knowing, seeing the clothes, seeing the everything,
like watching, I'm like, I didn't have to look it up. I know exactly what year this is.
Yeah, it feels very like home, and it's why I want to go. Let's go back in time.
Yeah,
this one, Kirstie Alley, her only Emmy ever. It was her third nomination for Cheers, and she was nominated an overall five times for Cheers.
Okay, I mean, if this is going to win her the Emmy, then.
Yeah, she's great.
She's
really good drunk acting. In general, you know, she's really good at playing this character that is kind of a minefield of a character, but hey, she's gung-ho. I also love a Cheers when it's like there are more women on the cast. You know, we have three, Lilith, Carla, and Rebecca, who are all so different.
and they kill it all in their respective field. Yes.
So good. My only complaint is, why is there not a Carla Funko Pop yet? I have the other five.
But not Carla.
They haven't made Carla, and Carla looks like a Funko Pop.
Already.
How do you not do that?
You don't need to do much altering.
No, her proportions are already of a Funko.
Yeah.
Way more than, like, honestly, like, no shade to Diane, but she's way more instantly recognizable, Carla is, as a Funko Pop than Diane, who just looks like blonde lady with an apron on, holding a beer glass. Come on, Funko, get on it. On IMDb, 253 users rated this episode an 8.2 out of 10.
Which is the highest of the season.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. I don't know if that's accurate.
IMDb audience reviews.
No, yeah. I'm saying I don't know if that's accurate IMDb audience. I believe that. I don't know if I trust their judgment on that. Is this the best episode of the season? When is Old Fashioned Wedding? Is that season 10?
That's season 10.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, that is a farce. That's noises off level.
Mwah. So good. Yeah. I will do that episode at some point. But that's like a special. Like, this is a two-parter of just like, oh boy. If I, in a dream world where I do live must-have seen TVs, that would be a great one to do live because it's very much a live vibe.
Can you imagine live events where people gather?
No, we're in hell. I am shading it that it's like, this can't be the best episode of the season, but I'm also like, I would give this a 9 probably. Like, I would probably go higher.
Like, really, Kirstie Alley, it's just like her and all her neurotic glory.
Yeah. And the fact that every single character gets a really good laugh line in this episode, in an episode that is a Rebecca episode, Lilith, I mean, who's your must-see performer of this episode? I think mine's Bebe Neuwirth.
I mean, she's just so... Oh, the thing is, like, that I'm always going to be Bebe-leaning. And she, like, I just love Lilith. She's just... Yeah.
She is great. There is also something different about, like, watching Frasier on Frasier and Frasier on Cheers. I love Frasier on Cheers so much. But when a character becomes the nucleus of a show, they have to, like, you know, change and grow and, like, the focus of the comedy. And so, like, he becomes not as... He's still fun, but he's not as fun. And I do wonder, like, what if they had spun it off and it was Kelsey Grammer and Bebe Neuwirth? Like, if it was the two of them, like, what would that have done?
I mean, it would just be, like, the Lilith show. Like, I feel like, I don't know. It's a different timeline.
Because Lilith still pops up on Frasier a bunch, and she's great. I mean, I love every time I also think that she brings out the best in Frasier also.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, Frasier is great on Cheers because he is the voice of reason. He's the one that is, like, reacting to
and
the
everyone
insanity.
Everyone else is, like, wacky. And then Lilith brings him down even, like, to reality. While he's
On Frasier, they have to amp up his, like, he's more of the weird one, even though, like, it doesn't, I don't know, it's a different character. It's the same character, but different. But you know what? We all code shift in our day-to-day. I'm a different person with my family than I am with my friends.
It's true. I'm different when I'm in Seattle than when I'm in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to Portland, and I've been to Boston. I've never been to Seattle.
Okay. I haven't been to Seattle, but I imagine I would be different than when I'm in Boston. I was only in Boston once, so...
Oh, I've been three times, I think. We all got rowdy because of their very stringent lights out, last call laws. Like, they close bars early there. I don't know if that's changed. Like, midnight or something is last call?
That's early.
It's a weird thing where the public transit stops running, like, an hour before bars close or something.
Well,
like,
that's
it's
just
a
not
weird.
Practical.
Yeah, it's a weird, it was a, but this is also, 10 years ago. Oh God, no, like 14 years ago.
Okay,
when I was
so you
like,
don't even
oh,
know.
Geez.
I started going to bars in college in New York. And then I remember visiting friends and going out to a bar in California. And I didn't even know. I didn't even stop because I was a dumb early 20-year-old, maybe teenager. I didn't even know that. Why would any bar close before 4 a.m.? So when last call came at like 1:30, I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. And I was like, oh, actually, that's more normal.
Yeah, New York is falling.
We are
nuts.
The drinkiest drug town. That is insane.
Oh, now that I am 36, I'm like,
now that I'm 20.
I was closing out McManus at 4 a.m. When I was 23. Like,
what?
I worry for my safety. It's so wild.
What was I doing? I was
also, the fact that it would be like 1 a.m. and you're like, cool, yeah, so we're going to this other place, right? Yeah, like you're still like mobile and going places at 1, 2 a.m.
The idea of staying out at a bar till 10 is like exhausting to even think about now. Not that
now
any, there's nowhere to go anyway, though, but you know, yeah.
So must other people see this episode of television?
Yes. 100%, especially if you haven't watched Cheers in a while and you feel that you've calcified in your opinions over the Sam or the Diane and Rebecca years. I mean, Sam, you should just have the same opinion of all the time. He's a fucking stone cold fox that will never change. But yeah, I think it really highlights everything good about the back half of the whole series.
Just laugh a minute, really fast paced, so many good jokes. So many good jokes that you've never heard before, too. Like, and even like joke structures. Like, they're not even relying on the kind of sitcom joke structures that you still hear in shows today, and we're hearing at that time. Like, the whole Lilith thing is like, where did this come from? Cliff's Mylar balloon tangent is like, it's totally. There's this old adage about, like, in Friends season one, when they were in the writer's room and they would pitch jokes, someone, like, it would, there was a rule of, like, if anyone had ever heard that joke before,
then
they would say,
or if someone did a setup and then both people came up with the same joke, it was like, no. And, like, I think that's a hard limitation to work within, but they got so good at working that muscle that they can have jokes about Mylar balloons that go nowhere else.
Yeah.
But the characters are so lived in and they know them so well and the audience knows them so well. Or even if you drop in, it's presented with so much confidence that you accept it. You're like, yeah, sure, of course.
I haven't show you, you said the audience knows them so well, and I forgot to show you that I bought in the early 90s, when you would go to see Cheers, I think, was what I understand from the eBay listing. When you would go to it, be in a Cheers studio audience, everyone got a Cheers tote bag and wristwatch. And so I bought a Cheers tote bag and wristwatch from, 91, 92, maybe this season even. It's a navy blue. Like, it's a satchel. Like, it's like zippers and buckles. Like, it's like a nice
like a
thing
messenger
that has the Cheers.
Bell?
Yeah, it has like the Cheers logo on it in red. And I think it has red piping. And then the watch is like a nice black watch. And it has like a white face with the Cheers logo on it. And I'm like, great.
You're
bought them, nowhere to wear them to, but whatever. But, everyone should see this episode for that exact reason. Honestly, if you just want just a nice feeling of, where everybody knows your name, honestly. Like,
where,
it just
like,
feels
everyone's
like
in the same crowded bar and they don't have a care in the world.
It's so comforting. I mean, I will say until my dying day that my dream job is being a staff writer on Cheers for 11 seasons.
You sent me a link to those parties with the writers, and I mean,
it's all like, my dream job. It's why I have mostly given up on my hope of writing for television, because I'm like, what is even the point? Because I want to work on a show where the production starts in August and runs through like April, and you're doing 24 episodes a week or
that
24 episodes
exist
a season.
Now.
And I want, because like what you get with Cheers is you get this. You get No cast on no Netflix show will ever be able to be as tightly knit and like as efficient and worn in and lived in
and like
as this.
I imagine it was like college, like where you're just around each other all the time. They were always playing sports, ditching work to do shrooms on a boat. Like, you know, they like were like bonded.
And that's what I want. Like, I had that, you know, doing UCB and doing like Mod Night, doing sketch group, like my Thunder Gulch, my sketch group. We were together for 3 years and we still have an email chain. We were broken up in 2012, like we were broken up 8 years ago and we still, you know, they did a sketch at my wedding, like we weren't around each other 24/7, but like we were, you know, when you are working that in tandem with a big group of people, I love that feeling. I love that teamwork, and Cheers has that teamwork.
Yeah,
I need a time machine like, so I can go back in time.
It's like that feeling like, oh, we all went to camp together.
Yeah.
Like, and we all had fun and we did work, but it didn't feel like work. And then we produced these amazing things just from the joy of being around each other, which, what a dream.
Yeah. And it doesn't exist anymore because television is in a bizarre state and no show can go past 30 episodes and 3 seasons.
Yeah. And, and I feel like that's like a British thing that's come over.
And it's not even, and it's more because of, so the British did it by choice. So like that was a weird choice that they, not weird. It was like a fully different choice that they decided a long time ago.
I think it
now,
was because Fawlty Towers did 2 seasons and then everyone, and that was such a major hit. Everyone was like, oh, we're going to do 2 seasons. And then, I guess like in the like late 90s, early 2000s, I read some article where like Americans wish they could be more British and Brits wish they could be more American and have the chance to expand shows.
Now we have this hodgepodge where like shows are same thing with like comic books. It's all the same. Like shows are announced as like with the we as Americans still have the understanding of like, cool, great, I love this show. I'm going to be with it for 7 years, 5 to 7 years. Like, that is still the understanding that people our age, maybe a little bit younger, probably not little kids, they have that. And so when people get so bent out of shape when it's like, you know, this show is getting canceled after three, like, Glow is ending after 4 seasons, and, like, you know, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is ending after 3 seasons, or things, and people get so mad, and it's because all of those decisions are fueled by algorithms. Like Netflix does everything via algorithm. It's all like you have to watch it all as fast as possible. Oh, so it isn't even like an artistic choice anymore. It is this first of all, like no one watches network TV, so the shows that could go don't. And then it just is so.
Well, also television used to be, and I think like the last show this happened for was Game of Thrones, where everyone watched it then you waited to talk about it, and like now it's like you know, you go online to talk about it, but it used to be like you go to work and then you go to the water cooler and talk about that episode of TV, or like for me it was like high school, and then it was like, did everyone watch Dawson's Creek?
I don't like that, but like the Netflix model has completely it's ruined television. The whole season all at once bullshit was like so cool at first, but it has completely squandered cultural penetration and culture of you're excited about a thing. Like,
and it changes
Watchmen.
The pacing of a season.
Watchmen was exciting because it was, 9 episodes that were released weekly, and every single week you got a week of analysis, and did you see this? Holy shit, like it was so much fun. Whereas, like, Umbrella Academy Season 2 came out 2 weeks ago, and it's a great season. I loved watching all of it.
It feels like a month ago now. That's insane.
But everyone talked about it for 2 days, and now no one is talking about it. And then that is it.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, you watched it all. And like, you can't talk about episode by episode if people are watching it in 5-episode chunks.
Pieces. And it is, it's a real, splintering of the viewership and community and the fun of talking. That's honestly why Drag Race is so much fun and why I love it so much, is because it is a weekly event that has been going on since February of this year, because they just keep on doing new spinoffs and series. Yeah. And I'm fine with it, because what the hell else am I doing?
Yeah.
But I miss those days. I miss those days of, you know, Cheers being the thing that came on every week and you were like invested and like it was just hanging out with your friends every week, instead of once every 14 months, you get to hang out with them for 10 hours and then you're done for another year.
And then forget about it. And now also with these seasons, like, you know, you binge watch everything in a week. And then a year and a half later, it comes back and you're like, what happened?
What the fuck even happened? Like, I'm supposed to care about this. It is bad. And I hope something changes. I don't know. I mean, there are bigger things in the world need to change first, and then we'll just figure out what's going on with everything.
Are we going to run out of new TV soon?
Yeah. Well, Netflix has said over and over again that they have enough content banked for, you know, the next 6, 7, 8 months, like a while.
Okay.
I don't know what else. I mean, yeah, no, but we are like, whatever, like, even if they have it banked, we're still going to be hit. We're going to hit a drought because of the last 5 months. Like,
yeah.
It might be gangbusters for a while, but then if we get back up and running, then we might have there's 4 months of like scarce shit.
Yeah, there's just going to be a lull, which is.
But that's why everyone should just
revisit
watch old stuff.
The classics.
Revisit the Odd Couple's great, Cheers is great, Lucy Show's real fun. I'm having fun with that.
Mm-hmm. Like my roommate Matt Schveek was saying, "Oh, we're gonna run out of TV. What are we gonna do?" I'm like, "What about all the things we've been meaning to watch that keep getting knocked down?" Like, also,
I keep wanting to make an old school style TV schedule for myself. Like program every single week, like program, here are 4 sitcoms and a drama that I want to watch every, you know, weekly of like new stuff, old stuff, just things. Cause there's so many things. The job I have, I watch the first and second episode of a ton of shows and then I don't finish anything.
Yeah.
Even if I like them a lot, I watched the first 2 episodes of Picard and then didn't have time. I still have not finished season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, even though I love that show. I still have not finished a season and a half of Maisel, and I love Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Like, it's just, there's just too much. I can't get all, but I also, you know, I have my database where I've reconstructed all the TV lineups for the past like 50 years of about 20 different shows, where I've organized them all by air date. So I know I can just watch things in air date order, which I've been doing, but been watching a lot of Genie lately for this book. But anyway, thanks so much for coming on to talk about Cheers.
It is an honor and a joy and just a slight joy in this unmitigated nightmare that we're all living in.
Yeah. Where can people find you online to talk about Cheers?
I'm at Someone in a Tree on Twitter and Instagram. I don't have any new projects coming out because all of my creativity is in a coma, but I'm coming out of it. This COVID-induced creativity coma. But yeah, if you want to follow me for good Horn Dog for Ted Danson content, I'm your gal.
Get into it! And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Angela Demanti, for dropping by and talking about Cheers with me. Next time, I'll be discussing something. I don't know what just yet. So you know what? You're just going to have to wait and find out. Those are the rules we play in quarantine. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms. Apologies if I don't respond right away, because it's a lot of accounts to check, and honestly, I'm a one-man operation, and I'm just trying to do my best. Thanks to y'all for understanding. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read the words that I write at decider.com, rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts, please. It would help a lot. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to y'all for listening. I'm going to see y'all next time on Must Have Seen TV. D-D-D.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.